This is the Photography Podcast on photography.ca, episode number 70, keeping everything nice and sharp. Hey there, photo lovers. How's it going? And welcome to the 70th Photography Podcast on photography.ca. My name is Marco, and we're coming to you from St. John's, Newfoundland. So yes, I'm in St. John's, Newfoundland, and I got a flight tomorrow morning, and my wife and I have been vacationing here for 2.5 weeks, and I must say, it's a fabulous, fabulous province. Very friendly people, great, great accents, much better than mine, thicker, different, just great people, beautiful province, especially for like nature photographers and wildlife photographers. Highly, highly, highly recommended. So recently on the photography.ca forums, sharpness has become an issue in some of the threads, and I thought we'd dedicate this podcast to sharpness problems, getting things as sharp as we possibly can, and some of the common mistakes people make. But before we get into it, as always, I like to thank people for their comments on the last podcast, number 69, where we talked about street photography, and Rob VE, TLD, who suggested the podcast, Ants, and I for Macro, all commented on the podcast telling me that they liked it, that they got some useful stuff from it, which makes me happy. They also let me know that the feed wasn't working properly again in iTunes, and I'll be back tomorrow. And within the next few days to a week, we have to fix this. We have to fix it. I have to fix it. It will be fixed. I'd also like to thank people for their comments in the forum and people that send me emails as well. Okie doke, so let's get right into it. Today's podcast is going to be about getting the sharpest shots possible. And, you know, there are a few obstacles to getting optimum sharpness. And I thought we'd go over a couple of them, especially the common ones. So the first and most obvious reason that people don't get sharpness is because their focus is off. And sometimes when we use autofocus, the autofocus can search for something and it's not getting the right thing. So, you know, when it's a matter of critical focus, I always highly recommend manual focus. And once you see the object crystal clear in your viewfinder, it should be crystal clear on the shot. So, you know, if you're just starting out, especially, you want to make sure that you're focusing on the exact object you should be. If it's a person, you might want to focus on their eye more likely than not. If it's an insect, you want to be very careful about where you're going to focus, because a depth of field, which is something we're going to talk about shortly, is also greatly reduced when you're doing macro work or trying to make small things loom large with lenses or extension tubes or macro filters, etc. You need to be really aware of that. So your focus, actually focusing, making sure that the crosshairs or the target area of your camera is properly focused, that's going to be number one. The next is going to be shutter speed. And I've said this many, many times before, but because we always get new listeners, I'm going to say it again. You need to be using the right shutter speed for the right subject. So if you as a photographer are hand holding the camera, you are very unlikely to be able to hold it steady enough once you're talking about 1/30th of a second. So at around 1/30th of a second, your own movement will introduce blur into a photograph, and that will sacrifice sharpness. If you're really, really, really careful, 1/30th might do it. If you're leaning on something, you know, if you're really brace your camera well, but at 1/15th, 1/8th, you are introducing your own movement into there. So I usually recommend 1/60th of a second minimum. And that's if you're using a shorter lens, like a 50 millimeter lens, you would want to use a 1/60th of a second, something like that. But if you're using a longer lens, then the rule is 1 over the focal length of the lens. So if you're on a 50 millimeter lens, you might be able to get away with 1 over 50 or 1 over 60. But if you're on a 200 lens, or even if it's a macro, 70 to 200 macro, that's a popular one. If you're using the 200 end of it, you need to be at 1/200th of a second minimum. And in my experience, that's not enough. Those long lenses require faster shutter speeds, and it takes really, really, really skilled hands and steady hands to get at the actual focal length. In my experience, even for myself, when I'm shooting the long end of my 200, I'm typically going at 1/400th or a 1/500th just to ensure that sharpness, because I will be introducing my own movement and I don't find that I'm steady enough. So 1/200th of a second, I will find that if I do a test, one at 1/200th of a second and one at a 1/500th of a second, let's say I'm taking a picture of a person, I will notice time and time again that my 500th of a second shot will be sharper than my 200th of a second. So, although the rule is 1 over the focal length of the lens, you may want to go a little bit faster if you are noticing sharpness issues. Now again, when we're talking about shutter speeds, there's not only the photographer's movement, but there's also the subject's movement as well. If the object is a rock, it likely doesn't matter, right? But let's say we're shooting a plant, or a person, or an animal. Well, that plant, person, or animal is also going to have its movement based on, you know, how it's moving in the air around it if it's a plant. So even though you may think that 1/60th of a second is enough, because let's say you're using, a 50 millimeter lens, you think, okay, 1/60 should be plenty. And then you take a picture of a plant and it's moving in the wind. Well, if that plant is moving in the wind, you are going to need a faster shutter speed because a 60th of a second won't be fast enough to capture it. So you may want to go to 1/125th or 1/250 or anywhere in between and gauge your sharpness. The windier it is, the more movement your subject is giving you, the faster you have to go to make sure that it is frozen. And that's when we want to make it tack sharp. Obviously, if you want to introduce movement on purpose, there's no issue with that. It's creative. I do it all the time. But you're not going to get things looking tack sharp, which if that's what you want, well, then that's what you need to do. So you need to shoot faster in that case. So in the case of, let's say, a plant on a windy day, personally, I'd again be shooting somewhere at, 1/200, 1/250, 1/320, 1/400, somewhere in there, depending on how windy it is and, how much movement there is. If it's like a bird, birds are notorious for these jagged movements. So you're going to want to shoot really fast. I've been shooting some birds recently. I'm going to post them soon. Shot a whole bunch in Newfoundland. And I was also noticing, because I'm not the hugest bird shooter. I just love to shoot everything that's cool. There's lots of birds here, so I shoot. And you need to shoot fast because they're jagged movements. If you want them frozen, you're going to have to shoot fast. And I would suggest 1/500 minimum, maybe 1/500, 1/800, 1/1000 sometimes, depending on how jagged the bird's movements are. And they can be really, really jagged, as most birders know, or anyone that's tried to capture a bird. It is difficult because those suckers move fast. Now, this brings me into my next point of a tripod. So if you are shooting a bird, for instance, you may well want to be on a tripod. And I tried to save myself some back pain because I do not have a carbon fiber tripod. I've had the same old Manfrotto. I think it's a 055. It's been many, many, many years. We could be going on 15 years. I have this same tripod and it works amazing. And I'm mostly about portraits, so I'm carrying a lot of gear with me anyway. And when I do my shoots, I just carry that tripod. It's no issue. It fits in my bag. It's beautiful. It's a solid, solid beast. But it's heavy. So, I tried to go lighter on this trip. I was traveling with my wife. I figured, I'll do some photo stuff, but it won't be as serious as if I would be alone. Let me just take a light tripod. And you know what? I wasted my money. I spent $30 on a plastic tripod. And I figured, you know what? For the few shots I'm going to use, it'll be enough. And you know what? It was a monster mistake. I feel stupid for even thinking that it might be good enough. And it wasn't good enough. So a couple of times where I was photographing birds, in particular some swans, I just noticed that the movement of the wind was moving this crap plastic tripod. And yes, I could have attached a sack of rocks to a notch on the bottom of the tripod, but holy moly, what a hassle. You really have to be aware that a crappy tripod is, for all intents and purposes, in many situations, useless. Because we want our tripods to produce sharp shots, if they're not doing it, they're useless. So invest in a good tripod. It doesn't have to be a carbon fiber tripod. Those suckers are $700 or $800. Of course, I got my eye set on one now because I saw someone shooting birds with one and I was so jealous because all I had was my rinky-dink thing. But you got to get yourself a good tripod. If you got the muscles, just buy one of the older ones. They're a few $100, very, very solid, and they'll last you for decades. I know mine has, a decade and a half anyway. But don't waste your time on cheap tripods. They're crap. I also wanted to get into the minimum focal distance. And depending on the lens you have, You can't focus at all distances from an object. And people that are doing macro work, taking shots of bugs, flowers, things of this nature, well, they know this straight up from experience. If you go too close, you are out of focus. So you have to know the minimum focal distance of your lens, and that's going to come with the information that came with your lens. And you know, you can't go too close or things will go out of focus. Now, related to this is going to be aperture and depth of field. And this is actually probably going to conclude most of my tips, but the aperture also is very, very, very crucial for sharpness. So if you want to take a picture of a an insect, again, you know, if you're at f2.8 or, you know, 3.5, somewhere in that zone, the amount that's physically even possible to get into focus is very, very, very limited. And what they do have is they have depth of field scales. And I'm going to put a link in the show notes for these depth of field scales that people that do this type of mission critical work, it might be very useful for them. In the old days, things were written on the barrel of the lens, but these days, not so much. So depth of field scales are often very, very useful. And you can just put them in your scene and see how sharp it will be. It'll give you a really, really, really good guide on how sharp it'll be. Obviously, if we're shooting smaller subjects, most times we're going to want to use, you know, really, really, really small apertures, f16, f22, f32, something like this if we can. And even then, if we expect our whole object to be in sharp focus, we're just not being realistic because, again, as you get really, really close to an object, the zone of sharpness that you can get tack sharp from foreground to background is very, very, very limited. And you need to know that going in or you're going to have some false expectations. It's funny, actually. It's really, really, really interesting. You know, you could look at some shots. They're macro shots, f16, f22, and they're not going to be perfectly sharp. They're just not. Often they're not because there's too much room from foreground to background and the lens aperture cannot cover it. So this is a common thing that we get on the forum, and I've gotten emails about this. You know, why isn't my shot sharp? It was on a tripod. I used this f-stop. It should have been sharp. And the answer is no, it really shouldn't have. You need to know the capability of your lens, and it varies lens to lens, and it varies manufacturer to manufacturer, and it varies at the camera to subject distance. You need to kind of know this going in. So experiment, play, you know, take shot. If you're not sure what you're doing, if you're just getting into this, start off taking different apertures. You know, take one at the low end, take one at the high end, take some in between, and you're going to see the differences that you're going to get. And, you know, they're going to have more pleasing and less pleasing effects. Sometimes we don't want to use that big depth of field. As we've said many, many times before, we want to use selective focus. So we want to maybe choose a larger aperture, a smaller number. And, you know, maybe get, if it's a dragonfly, let's say, it's a longer insect. So we may only want the head sharp and the tail more blurry. Or if it's a flower, we may only want the center or some of the petals sharp and the rest blurry. And we can use this, of course, by playing with our aperture. So we need to know this, that only certain areas of the photo are going to be tack sharp. And that's after we take our movement, the flower's movement, being on a tripod. We need to take all these things into consideration. And once we do, then we can gauge our actual sharpness. In terms of what camera to use, really, I'm speaking only about digital SLRs and better. You know, point and shoots, yes, they can be done, but it's much harder to control aperture, shutter speed. There's shutter lag involved. I don't know. I'm not the hugest fan of point and shoots for mission critical work, though they are excellent to as a camera to have on you all the time when you don't want to carry all your gear. But for mission critical work, which is kind of what this podcast is more about, getting the best sharpness possible, you're going to want to use a better camera. So I hope we're talking about digital SLRs anyway. That's what I'm talking about. So though, yes, if all you have is a point and shoot, you can get very sharp shots. It just might be harder to do so because it's sometimes harder to focus and adjust the shutter speed, etc. And I guess the last tip I want to share is tracking a moving subject. Tracking a moving subject, that's seriously hard to do, and it's hard to do really well. And, you know, I tried to do it with birds a few times here because, again, I'm not the biggest birder guy, but I'm getting really into nature, and more and more and more I'm getting into like animals and nature and wildlife, whereas for years and years and years I was mostly only doing portraits. But, you know, because the members on the forum are taking such great shots, they're inspiring me to try all kinds of new things. So, you know, on this particular trip, I tried tracking birds a few times, and it's very, very, very difficult. And again, you need to take all these things into consideration again, and you have to track a moving subject. So, you know, you have to go even faster, you know, so because the subject is moving, the subject's wings are moving. If it's a bird, you're moving. You really have to shoot fast and your focus has to be spot on. So when you're really, really, really good, and sometimes a good autofocus system helps as well a lot, but when you're really good and you're well practiced, you can track a moving subject such that you get some tack sharp shots. Even pros are going to miss a huge percentage. So, you know, even for a bird, for me, guy like me, I want the eyes to be sharp. So try and get a moving bird's eye sharp. It's darn hard. You need the right lens. You need to be able to see the bird's eyes to begin with. Anyways, you need a longer lens. Hard to do. Hard to do. Practice, 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 practice. But again, keep in mind that you're going to be needing a very fast shutter speed to do this. I would suggest no less than 1/500th of a second and likely faster. I was using 1/1000 for a lot of my shots where I was trying to track a bird. And I don't even know if I was successful yet because I haven't even put them up on my computer to see mission critical sharpness. So I'm only going to know that shortly. But either way, I'm going to post a few shots on the forum. And I don't know if it's the tracking shots, but I'll post some bird shots and it'll be fun. And people can critique my own work, which people are free to do, of course. And I share what I know and I learn what I don't, so it's all good. Well, that's going to do it for me for today. As always, if people have their own tips that they want to add or they think I left something out, especially if they feel that I've left something important out, please let me know. Please comment either by email, photography.ca@gmail.com. You can post a comment in the forum if you're lurking. The forum keeps getting new members and new pictures are going up, and it's really become a really tight community. I'm so proud of it. I'm so proud of our members. You know, I just love new people to join, so if you're lurking, please join. And our favorite way to get comments is, of course, directly on the blog. You have to register your name just to make sure you're not a porn spammer. But we never do anything with the information. Don't sell it, rent it, trade it, hawk it, do anything despicable with it. So your info is safe, guaranteed. And that's really the best way we like to get a comment because it follows the actual podcast post itself. So if you are able to leave a comment and you want to do so, that is our preferred way. Feed should be fixed soon. You can still see everything really easily with a Google Reader. So if you go to reader.google.com, if you have a Gmail account or something, everything's free. And you just subscribe to the blog with Gmail, you get all the posts. I'm having the iTunes thing fixed within a few days, hopefully, as mentioned. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. And as always, it's still summer. We still have, you know, great weather out there. There's still so many things to shoot that there's no reason we should be inside. So let's just get outside and keep on shooting. Bye for now, everyone. Thanks for listening.